Carla Blue.
Hey, UpHeart is a not-for-profit organization launched by Annie Garcia, an attorney practicing here in Houston. Garcia was compelled to found this organization after her daughter, Ariana, almost died from an undiagnosed congenital heart defect. UpHeart is focused on getting pediatric cardiac 3D printed replicas of patients' hearts as a preoperative treatment tool.
Mm-hmm.
That is just so cool.
That is. Well, you know, and Annie is currently working with Dr. Charles Frazier, chief of surgery at Texas Children's Hospital, and his entire team to fund a study to demonstrate the incredible benefits of 3D print models of kids' hearts prior to surgical treatment. And she believes that 3D printed models will make for better surgeries, will have a profound impact on the practice of pediatric cardiac medicine. This is really groundbreaking and exciting kind of information. So, Annie Garcia, welcome to the Open Journal.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a thrill to be here.
All right. So, what is the latest, you know, cutting edge? This sounds like we're there with you in this UpHeart thing. Pediatric cardiology, 3D printing. Tell us that story.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's a very exciting intersection of medicine and technology. It kind of came about because I was spending a lot of time in the pediatric intensive care unit with my daughter. She had, as you mentioned, been born with an undiagnosed critical congenital heart defect called transposition of the great arteries. And what it meant essentially was that she wasn't getting enough blood into her, or enough oxygen into her blood. And over the first 6 weeks of her life, her oxygen levels were diminishing. And by the time that we realized that there was something wrong, we took her into the ER, and she was with less than 30% oxygen. And this led to a couple of very intense months in the intensive care unit. And at the time, this was completely unexpected, and I was still working on some projects, many of which require 3D printing for prototyping purposes. And so I kind of had that in one side of my brain, and the other, I was in the intensive care unit with my daughter for 10 hours a day. And through some conversations with her care team, we started talking about the application of 3D printing in pediatric cardiology. And, you know, it's really amazing. I can't say enough about what these doctors have to do with these children. That a baby's heart is the size of a walnut. A walnut.
That's a good visualization.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
This is my second child, and I couldn't have told you how big my kids' hearts were, but it's the size of a walnut, and her surgeon had to go in there, and he had to move around structures that are the size of an angel hair pasta. And he's doing this with his own two hands. There are no robotics involved. He's doing it with his own two eyes. And he's doing it hunched over a table for 10 hours.
Sewing capellini for 10 hours.
And I mean, it's incredible. And he's doing this on a structure that's typically inflated and blood's flowing through it and it has to be flattened. So he has to imagine what the heart looks like once they start letting the blood flow again. And then he has to think about, well, what's this heart going to do in 10 years when the kid is 4 feet tall and running across a field or asleep? And I mean, it's amazing to me. It's amazing what these people can do. But they were doing it, and they are doing it in large part. He would go in before surgery at 4 p.m. He had surgery scheduled, say, the next day at 8 a.m. He'd go in at 4 p.m. He'd sit down. He'd start drawing. And he would just draw. He would draw the heart that he was going to be operating on. He'd mentally perform the surgery, and then he even trained himself to dream about his surgery. Wow. I mean, he was one of the best surgeons in the world. This man is amazing. And if anybody's ever interested in this, there's this wonderful book called Walk on Water by Michael Ruhlman.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing book. But so I was talking to him about this and his process, and I said, is there really no way 3D printing could help you with this? And he just about, you know, dropped his jaw to the floor, and he said, you know, that's exactly, you know, I've been interested in this forever, but I don't know what's going on with it. Well, so I started researching it, and there's a wonderful company in Belgium that works in this space. And I went to a conference there, and I met all of these amazing doctors, and it just, the project just kind of blossomed from there. And so I know it sounds very, high techy, and I'm like most lawyers, I'm kind of afraid of math and tech. But it's such a simple, elegant solution to it's honestly, it's low hanging fruit. This technology is so easy to implement. It's so cheap, and the effects of it reverberate not only throughout a child's life, which is as the parent of a child who's we really had to contemplate what her future looked like if she was ever going to be able to be independent of us, to you know, cost savings across the board, to better surgeries, fewer transplants. It's amazing, and I'm so excited because I get to meet some of the nicest, most talented, most amazing people in the world, like Dr. Frazier at Texas Children's.
What an amazing story. Well, tell us a little bit about your daughter, Ariana, now. How did she benefit as a result of, well, even just giving this idea and the technology?
You know, it's the thing that, and I refer back to the book Walk on Water, because I had never been admitted to a hospital before. Both my kids were born in home births, and this was completely new space for me. And so I didn't know what normal was. I didn't know how to read doctors. I didn't know what it meant when they said certain things, the vocabulary, and I was lost. And my surgeon offhandedly recommended this book, Walk on Water, and I read it and became my guidebook for how to navigate this space. And one of the points that Michael Ruhlman makes so elegantly in his book is that not every doctor can be amazing. And the quality of the doctor is so critical. I mean, you really have, it's such a short period of time in a child's life, but the consequences determine that child's abilities, limitations, pathways for the rest of that child's life. And we were so blessed because we ended up on the doorstep of one of the best surgeons in the world. And for me, I'm not a particularly spiritual person, but there were points in this that I feel like I was put on a path and I'm following like these celestial breadcrumbs, as I call them. So I just follow the trail of breadcrumbs. My daughter didn't benefit from this technology directly in her treatment, but it opened my eyes to its application and how many kids out there aren't going to find Enrique Garcia or Charles Frazier or Paul Welke the leaders in this field. There are plenty of people out there practicing this kind of medicine that don't have the 20 years, 30, 50 years of experience. And it's for those kids and those teams that I work harder than for anybody else.
Well, I took a quick peek into that book, Walk on Water, and in it, one of the surgeons talks about dealing with pediatric heart defects and the congenital issues as, quote, soul-crushing, diamond-making stress. And just hearing your description of how this doctor would have to essentially visualize this heart and do and operate on angel hair pasta for 10 hours straight.
Unbelievable.
Without the technological assistance of something as simple as this 3D printed image. So can you describe, you went to Belgium, you did this research, you did a little bit of detective work, and you came back with new information. How did you go about then sharing that and getting it adopted or put into use?
Well, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I kind of have come into this technology, this point, at a sweet spot, I think, because the technology is viable, it exists, it's being utilized. The problem is one of scale. It's not available. And the largest roadblock to its availability is insurance companies. That it's not a line item expense that they're willing to cover. And so hospitals aren't investing in the printers, and they're not really even informing themselves as to what's available for the treatment of their patients. So this is really being done only at the best hospitals in the United States, best pediatric cardiology centers in the United States, like Texas Children's, like Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, like Boston Children's, like Illinois Children's. And so I am working now with doctors that I've met. And in doing this, I put the my first approach was going to these doctors and I said, hey, I want to put together this video and I want you just to say what this technology means for you. And from that, you can go on the website, opheart.org. There's a link to my video. And on the video are 16 doctors. I spoke to every single one of them myself and I asked them that question. And the video is a compilation of their responses to that. But I asked them how they benefited from the technology, and the response has been, you know, the biggest issue is that we're all kind of, paying for it with our research dollars or our slush funds, our medical slush funds, but they don't have a third party payer, agreeing to pay for this. So what I'm trying to do, and I asked all of them, what can I, as a non-medical person, as a lawyer, as a project manager, as an entrepreneur, what can I do to help? And the answer has been, help us get a study in place. Help us manage a study so that we can show insurance companies that this technology saves money. It saves lives, but it seems like the idea of saving money is more interesting to third-party payers than the life-saving bit of it.
And so is that what's going on now?
Yeah, we're doing, I mean, I've, that's my main thrust right now. I'm trying to, I'm getting Opheart organized, but we're having, there's going to be an article in the New York Times, hopefully in June. And so I'm actually going to Phoenix in a couple weeks to do an event that's going to underscore, Phoenix is, has, there's this amazing man out there named Dave Frakes, who's on his own initiative, spearheaded 3D printing with the support of Arizona State University at Phoenix Children's Hospital. And he is responsible for the largest concentration of patients that have benefited from 3D print technology. So we're going to go there, do an event. The reporter's going to accompany me there. And hopefully we'll get something into the New York Times in June, and then that will really help us do everything we need to do to get this technology into hospitals other than, you know, the top tier.
So Annie Garcia from Opheart in on the Open Journal here. We're 22 minutes in front of the hour of 9 o'clock. Dwayne Bradley with Marlo Blue. So Annie, could you describe for folks, I know my mom listening wants you to tell her so that she doesn't have to call me later and ask, what exactly is a 3D print model?
Sure. Sure. It's like, I think when I heard about it initially, when I started working with 3D print technology, I felt about it like I felt about the concept of apps for the iPhone. Like, I was a little bit dubious and, frankly, scared of them.
I thought they were apps were the things that people walked around on trays and offered you.
You're a former waiter. Yeah, instead, imagine a printer like you have at home, but instead of printing in ink on paper, there's a platform, and instead of a platform that it's dropping a material onto, instead of ink, it's plastic or it's resin or it's gold. There's this wonderful website called shapeways.com. If you're ever interested, and the materials that they're 3D printing with now are just amazing. But essentially, it allows you to act like a little mini factory. And the way this technology works is that right now they're using MRI and CT 2D data. And so you go to the hospital, you have an MRI scan or a CT scan. Mm-hmm. So a child would come in and they would do ultrasounds, 3D ultrasounds. But then probably at some point they take them to the CT scanner, they'd do a CT or an MRI, and they would take that data, it's all 2D data, and then they would hand it off to somebody who's skilled in this, and that person would go and use a Photoshop-like application called Mimix, and they'd upload all the 2D data, and then they would take it, and they would look at each bit of data, and they would reconstruct from 2D data a 3D model. And the really cool thing about this is that I've talked to surgeons who have said because they can see things in 3D in their hands, they are able to think of new ways to implement treatments, less invasive ways, better ways. Mm-hmm. And so once they've created a 3D model, they have it on a computer screen, they send it to a printer. They hit print, and then it's a process of layer by layer dropping the material onto a flat surface and just building it, you know, one layer at a time, very slowly. And then at the end, they have an exact replica of a patient's heart, and the surgeon can take it, and depending on the material, he can cut it, or he can, you know, look inside for the different pathways. He can think about, you know, do I really want to try to create a patch from that material, or is there a better way to go and lay that tubing down? And I mean, it's the effects are profound, but it's actually fairly simple once you look into, well, if you're taking an eagle eye view, it's fairly simple. Once you get into it, it's crazy again, but that's what a 3D printer in pediatric cardiology looks like.
So this could be used for any other medical application?
Oh, sure. The wonderful thing about this conference I went to in Belgium at Materialize is that they produce the software, and then they also have some of the printers. And they don't do just medical applications. They have this ginormous printer, for example, called the Mammoth up in Detroit, because they do the prototyping for car companies up there. But I went there, and it was supposed to be a medical conference, and I was honestly very intimidated because I'm not a doctor. But I went up there, and it was wonderful because there were doctors that are in orthopedics, that are in plastic surgery, that they do everything. And because they were not all especially versed in one particular type of medicine, then they had to kind of dumb down their talks for the other doctors. So it's actually...
Thank you.
I know. I was like, this was perfect. So I met doctors that were working for in orthopedics is a huge application. I met a guy named Scott Hollister. He was on NPR a couple years ago because he 3D printed a dissolvable tracheal stent that he then surgically inserted into a patient whose trachea kept on collapsing, a baby kept on collapsing whenever she'd breathe or she'd have a seizure, and it would collapse. And he built this like a framework, a scaffolding, and then pinned it to the scaffolding, and it would hold her trachea open. And then over time, as her trachea grew stronger and stronger, it just dissolved, so he never had to go back in again.
Wow.
And I hear that the next X Prize, which is, I think they had a famous X Prize was the idea of a reusable rocket or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now the next X Prize is going to be a 3D printed organ. And so I know a doctor who's putting together a team to do that. But basically what they do is they create like a dissolvable scaffolding, and then they, instead of dropping ink or gold or whatever, they're dropping like live biological material on that scaffolding. And so the idea of a 3D printed organ, while it sounds insane, in the next 20 years, it's probably going to be a reality.
That's amazing.
I know. It's incredible.
And how will that work if you replace... Will we only be able to do that for adults? Because sizes change in children. I mean...
Those are great questions. I don't know. Honestly, I don't even know. I actually talked to a reporter the other day, and he asked me, well, so what happens after you accomplish this, that you get 3D printing covered by insurance companies? What next? And I was like, oh, there are so many different things. My underlying mission is to get children the best pediatric cardiac care possible. And right now I see it as a two-pronged strategy, getting doctors what they need and getting parents what they need. So on the other front, I'm working to create a reporting system that will go and allow parents to research individual doctors and see their scores using qualitative data and say, okay, they've performed the surgery how many times, what are the metrics, how well did they do, and in an easily digestible way. So there's plenty of work out there for me to do, and with a goal just like to help take care of our babies. Having gone through this myself, I know this was... You know, 2 weeks in my daughter's life, that the two craziest weeks. But what happened in those 2 weeks is, I mean, we sat down with doctors at one point. I remember a conversation, and I asked the question, well, what if this doesn't work? And they said, well, we'll think about other options. I said, oh, other options. I didn't know there were other options. Let's talk about those other options. They're like, do nothing. And that just like, I realized that we're talking about letting her go. And that sort of conversation for a parent is just the most, it's the worst thing. It's the absolute worst feeling in the entire world, having to contemplate that. And and we didn't that wasn't our reality, because we got one of the best surgeons in the world, but not everybody's going to get that.
I just love hearing you say that Texas Children's Hospital has one of the very best pediatric surgeons in the world.
Oh, Charles Frazier. I try to describe people to my friends and family. I'm like, you don't understand. Charles Frazier gave me an interview. This is like Brad Pitt. Like, he's the Brad Pitt of pediatric cardiology. This man is a rock star. No, he's amazing.
Rock star.
All right. So the Bruce Springsteen of heart surgeons. Annie Garcia from OpHeart in with us here, 14 in front of 9 on the Open Journal. We're going to step outside the cube briefly and find out what's happening. We'll be right back.
Well, peering from the cube, we see that, I should say on Friday, we forecast the likelihood of rain for Saturday and Sunday. That didn't much come to pass. The clouds at 6 a.m. Saturday morning sadly did block the view of that 5-minute-long lunar eclipse for Houston. But the sun came out later for a much better day than we had promised, and it looks like Saturday might have been the last not-hot day for a while. If uncertainty is keeping you from feeling safe, we can at least trust that for the foreseeable future, each day will be much the same weather-wise, a high of 85 degrees, cloudy to partly cloudy each day with pleasant cool nights in the 70s, rain unlikely until Friday. And Isaac Asimov died on this day in 1992, before which he wrote or edited more than 500 books. And regarding our Petrotech network of high-speed private transport vehicles, the Gulf Freeway is clearing. Suboptimal throughput begins mainly from Scott to downtown. 21 minutes average travel time from Dixie to downtown right now. And the Southwest Freeway is worse off. Kirkwood in downtown is a 39-minute drive. Traffic stop and go between Sam Houston Parkway and the Loop due to earlier accidents. North Freeway slows near Shepherd all the way to downtown. And we now return to more science fiction with OpHeart on KPFT's Open Journal.
Thank you, Patrick. But we're talking science fact here in the Open Journal today with Annie Garcia from OpHeart. 12 in front of 9 on the Mighty 90. Dwayne Bradley with Marlo Blue. Thanks for tuning in, dear listener.
This is just an amazing topic. I'm really happy that you're here today and so enthusiastic about it. How does OpHeart get its funding? How do you survive?
Well, right now I do contract legal work for Axiom, which is, I mean, it's really incredible how the legal market has changed just in a few years' time. Basically, I work for Axiom, and Axiom allows me to work on a contract basis. So I get to do the same legal work I did before, but I also have my own schedule, so I can work OpHeart in around it. But I'm in a process of fundraising, and so people can donate on the website. I'm also applying for grants, and then I'm trying to get in at this place called the Okra Bar, if you've ever heard of it.
Been there. Got whooped by babies.
Babies kicked us. They kicked us to the curb. Yes, they did.
Oh, you guys participated.
We were a participant in January, and one of the groups that we were competing against was called Life Houston. Little babies.
We could not compete.
You can't.
So is that the secret? I need to put the babies front and center.
Babies and kittens.
Get the babies, babies right there. Cute pictures, babies, the little smell, that wonderful baby smell. If you can just push that into that bar, you will win hands down.
Wow, I didn't realize it was so cutthroat.
Oh, it is. And we're already, you know, and all the losers, I mean, all the runners up.
We're all winners here.
Because there's 4 nonprofits every month at the Okra, and only one gets to win the profits from the next month's expenses of everybody drinking and eating there. So Life Houston got all of the February money came to them because they whooped us in January, if I'm recalling my months right. I may be wrong by a month, because I'm in a time blur. But all of the runners-up, the 3 who don't win, come November, the end of November, there will be 33 runners-up, 3 every month, only 11 winners. Well, those 11 winners, they make out like bandits, especially the 11th one, because in December, all 33 runners-up compete in a scramble for the December prize. All of us come in on that first week of December, 33 runners up, and And we compete. And at the end of the first week, half are eliminated. At the end of the second week, half are eliminated. It's like March Madness in December. And instead of basketball, it's drinking and eating and nonprofit money. So by the final week of the year, it's down to just four again.
Wow.
And then somebody wins.
Ooh, I almost want to opt out. It's like,
no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. See if you can get that month of December, of November as your okra month.
If I realized how cutthroat this was, and when we got there, we ended up, we saw these women from the Life Houston group, and they had decorated their little voting booth with baby pictures and baby bottles, and they were there giving out tote bags. Give us your vote, you get a free tote. And they were being all cute and everything, and we're like,
wait, if they have the money to give out free totes though.
Well, they were smart. They were smart.
That sounds like they came in with a plan.
We gave out bumper stickers and koozies, but we came in a little light and a little late. And we can make excuses, but we're already strategizing that we are going to be a December winner, the big winner at the end of the year. We're coming on hard.
You're going to have a baby.
We're going to
have in both arms.
All baby radio.
Both arms and a kitten right in between, if possible. But speaking of the end of the year, do you have anything specific coming up at the end of the year? What's on your schedule?
Well,
we're
doing we're trying to organize a 1-day conference in the fall. For 3D printing in connection with Texas Children's Hospital. And I am contemplating, I'm actually talking to an auctioneer today about doing a masquerade ball on Halloween is actually on Saturday this year. Ooh. So I'm talking to him about whether or not we should try to do a masquerade ball. But we're definitely going to be doing some events, possibly a charity golf tournament, something at St. Arnold's. So we're going to have a lot of stuff and an online campaign probably coinciding with the Huffington Post article in May. So it's a really exciting time to be doing this. I feel like our trajectory is right. We're going up. But right now it's kind of, cobbling together funding to do all of these different events. So any support, we have a wonderful website, built by Jaw Drop Design, who happens to be my husband, so I have to plug that. There's a donate now link, and you can donate now, and it's all very much appreciated. And the money's going to pay for prints for children that are going to be participating in the study. So it's going directly. All the money that I'm raising online is going directly into the fund to pay for the modeling.
And of course, we'll put it on our website, but do you actually have a Facebook page and a website that people can go to?
Yep. My husband made sure I got set up with all that stuff. So I have a Facebook page. I think I have a Twitter account, but I wouldn't look at anything I tweeted because it was probably a butt tweet.
Been there, done that.
So you and your rock star buddy, Dr. Frazier.
Yeah.
What's his participation in this project, op heart, with you, other than being like the rock star
Brad
guy?
Pitt.
Well, basically he probably from his perspective now mistakenly opened the door a crack, and I've like barreled my way into his life. He spoke with me in the study, and he's actually helping me identify where the holes in pediatric cardiology care are from a different perspective outside the patient's perspective. And so he's introduced me to the right people, and I'm going to ask for his hand on my board of directors very soon. And hopefully he's going to be more involved as we go forward in this. But he's been wonderful. He's, you ask if it's like, who did you liken it to?
Bruce Springsteen.
It's like if you got Bruce Springsteen to like tweet you or something, like just being able to breathe his name gives me instant street cred. It's wonderful. He's amazing.
And well done. Well, Annie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much
for
having me.
What a great topic. What a great possibilities our world is coming into.
I'm excited. I'm excited. Yeah. I feel like I was I feel really blessed, honestly, because this is I'm meeting awesome people like you guys. Thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
And we'll have you again.
Just another celestial breadcrumb on the path.